Treasures Radio Network, the voice of the 3%, is now on the air.
Guns, self-defense, survival, current events, and your future.
Can't take me.
We're rapidly approaching desperate times. Have you prepared your family physically, mentally, spiritually to face these times? Tyrant has overstepped his authority. What will you do when he comes to your door?
You can't take me, I'm free.
The Shooting Bench, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central.
It's easy to take liberty for granted when you've never had it taken from you. Hi, this is Amy Reynolds inviting you to come see what it's like living way out here, new on Just Measures Radio. We'll talk about cooking, canning, gardening, and homemaking, along with storytelling and nostalgic journeys to yesteryear.
Join Amy every Monday through Thursday morning right here on Just Measures Radio Network for Living Way Out Here, 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 to 11 Central. Don't miss it.
And what I wouldn't give to ride in that old truck with him. If heaven wasn't so far away, I'd pack up the kids and go for the day in Earth's under their grandpa.
Come. Hurricanes. Tornadoes. Western firestorms. Earthquakes. Financial collapse. Government upheaval. What happens when Walgreens closes? Whom do you turn to? You turn to Kat Ellis and myself, Chuck Hudson, on the Medi-Chat and learn how combat medicine and alternative herbal remedies can help keep you going no matter what. The Medi-Chat, live 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time here on Just Measures Radio Network. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs. Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog. By the banks of a stream sat one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man, and I can't seem to stop.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge.
Yeah, my only hope was Betty Lou. She was the one. A combination AK-57 Uzi Raider laser triple barrel double scoped heat-seeking shotgun.
Nobody knew where he came from. They only knew he came in.
Uh-oh, here he comes again. Here's Cope with the shooting bench.
I still remember these words. Oh, it's plain that you're looking for trouble. Trouble's what I try to shun. If that's what you want, then that's what you'll get. Cause cowboy, we're both packing guns.
You know what's good for you. Stay tuned for 100% Gun Talk, coming up right now.
44 spoke, and he sent letting smoke. 17 inches of flame. Oh, the big one had never cleared leather. Beaten before he could start. A little round hole had appeared on his shirt. The bullet went clear through his heart.
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of Just Measured Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. Be advised that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin skin, limp wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicles and backbone. Listener discretion is advised.
Alrighty, here we are. We finally made it in here for Thursday night for an all gun-related version of the Shooting Bench. We're going to try to live up to our name tonight. The Shooting Bench kind of got diluted over the years with everything else that's going on. So we try to pick one night a week where we talk about stuff that involves shooting or guns or militia or your gun rights, which is a lot of that stuff going on right now. So that's what we're going to try to work on tonight. Minnie says her... Let's see what's going on with the sound. All right. Guys, let me know. It looks like Minnie's having some problems. Hopper having some problems. Let's see. 32's working good. All right, Minnie, you guys let me know if the sound gets bad. If I need to, I'll restart Winamp or something here. All right, let's move on. Lots of gun legislation stuff going on. We're going to talk about a few of those things in a little while. But I told you last night, one of the writers from SWAT Magazine wants to come and take a class with us, but in particular... The fighting lever action class. So we're going to talk about that class just a little bit before we get into some of this other stuff. And he sees it for exactly what it is. We put it in there as an alternative to all of the military style battle rifles, assault style rifles out there. And be sure and note that I put assault style, okay? But there's sometimes it's just, I don't believe it's the right thing. If you're, by the way, before we get off on this, I'm having a problem stuttering here a little bit. Let me tell you why. My thumb hurts really bad. Let me see if my pictures have been synced here or download, whatever in the hell you call it. And if they have, I'm going to show you why my thumb hurts really bad and why that we are looking, or I am looking at getting rid of some goats here. I had an episode tonight. I have episodes all the time with goats. I'm getting where I can't stand them. But one had... There's one that's a really a jumper. And she always figures out a way. I finally figured out how she was getting out of the big pen. And I put some pallets up there and tried to block it off. She's jumping somewhere else. None of the other goats can get out. So I had that one area fixed, or I thought I did. And I was working in there on the chicken pen, trying to get it squared away for the monsoon rains that are coming in and everything. So upgrading a little bit. And, well, it don't look like my pictures came through yet. Upgrading a little bit. And I walked out across the yard there and left the gate open for a little while. And I didn't really... Wait a minute. Maybe they're right here. So I didn't think about it too much because I thought I had the goat problem fixed. Well, she got out, got in the place where the rabbits and the chickens are, just tearing up everything, ripping the damn rabbit feeders off of the wall and getting into everything, tearing stuff up. So I leave the gate open and I tried to herd her out. She don't want to get out. So I want to get a hold of her and escort her out. And she wouldn't do it and wouldn't let me get a hold of her. So she runs by and I grab a hold of her. And about that time she flipped to the side. And when she did, my thumb found either a screw or a piece of wire or something. And it cut my thumbnail right down the center into the meat, all the way down to the quick, and then ripped that part of it off. And it was just hanging by. It was real easy to pull off there because it was wasn't nothing holding on there anymore. So, needless to say, I was less than impressed with this goat situation. I didn't care for it at all. So I've got one picture. I don't know what happened to the other one here. But I'll find it here in a little while. I'm going to put this one in the chat room for you and let you see how much of my thumbnail come off. Now, in this picture, you look at the... There's two... Yeah, the edge of the woods, it probably will taste just fine if there's anything left of it. Now, if you look between the two bloody paper towels here, and see this big chunk of stuff laying there, that is my finger, my thumbnail. Or that's every bit, at least half, of my thumbnail that I pulled off. So now I have, longitudinally, I have half of my thumbnail. And I haven't got over being mad about that yet. I'm thinking when I go feed in the morning, I may take some strychnine down there with me. No, I wouldn't do that. They're Amy's goats, and it would break her heart. But if they weren't Amy's goats, they would all be dead right now. I'd go out there and take care of that tonight. I have had it with these freaking goats. But I haven't told Amy the whole story yet because he was texting me right when it happened, and I was trying to get get the bleeding stopped and the goat put away and the chickens put up and get ready for a meeting and do everything else, and I never did get back with her, so she probably thinks I'm mad at her. I'm not. But anyway, there you go. That's I don't know what happened to that other picture, but it'll come along here shortly, I imagine. All right, let's get back lever action class here. I thought about this while we were getting everything all squared away for Shots Ranch and deciding, you know, what we're going to run for classes and all that. And Raging Ray, it's strange enough, we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. We're going to talk about this situation with the military and the 9mm. Funny you should bring that up. The 007, what do you mean you wish you hadn't looked at the picture? It's just a bloody fingernail, or whatever, thumbnail. So we're putting together all this stuff for Shots Ranch, trying to figure out what we want to run for classes. And I said, well, everybody does pretty much the same thing. They have this military-style training for rifles and whatnot. And I said, what about if we did something a little, you know, out of the box there a little bit, and look at a survival style type gun, something that was a little more politically correct and still useful. So we decided we'd make a lever action class. I don't know who else, if anybody else offers strictly a lever action class. I'm sure there's somebody out there. But we're looking at it as time goes on, and this also might be something like for those thousands and thousands of deer hunters out there that only have a 35 Remington or a 30-30 or a 357 or 44 and a lever action rifle. What if they ever had to actually use that for protecting themselves? It's one thing just to, you know, pull the gun up, cock the hammer, and fire at one shot and stop the... But what if you actually have to fight with it? What if there's a group of hostiles, whether it's illegals or whatever the case may be? What if you actually have to get into a little more of a protracted firefight with this thing? So we decided that a fighting class for the lever action would be a good thing. Their balance, as far as I'm concerned, is unrivaled. I don't think there is a firearm of any description that matches the balance of a good lever action. Now, I'm not talking about the BLR. I'm not a fan of the Browning BLR. But when you look at the Marlins and the Winchesters, you know, the Taurus, the Henrys, and stuff like that, there's nothing that touches them for balance and quick handling and just a natural, I want to say point of aim, but that's not what I'm looking for. But just a natural handling characteristics. You throw that thing up and it's right there. Or at least it is for me. I have as hard as I have tried to get away, there was a short period of time that I had no lever actions and I didn't like myself anymore. I said, I have to have a lever action. I missed them. So that was kind of helped with getting the thing going for the class too. But they're a little bit unique as far as loading. It's one of the few guns out there that you can, one of the few rifles. There's a lot of shotguns you can do this with, but you fire a shot or two or four or five or whatever, and while you're in the midst of doing that, if you have the opportunity, you can reach down and cram a couple of shells in it and kind of keep it topped off. Hey, Anon, I put a bunch of archives on today, and I'm going to, when this show's over tonight, I'm going to publish a bunch of those. I've got them uploaded, and they're ready to go, so there'll be a bunch of them coming up sometime after the show tonight. I promise. I don't know if I'll get them all up, but I'll get some of them up there. I know I'm way behind. I always get way behind. But it's like a pump shotgun. You can do the same thing with a pump shotgun, but you can't do it very well with a bolt action rifle, because you take the rifle out of battery unless it has a magazine in it. If it has a magazine in it and something happens in the midst of the reloading, then you've got a handful of magazine, a handful of gun, and you're trying to get everything squared away. With the lever action or the pump shotgun or even the semi-automatic, as far as that goes, you just are shoving shells into the loading port there whenever you need to, whenever you can, and it doesn't take the gun out of battery. It would if you got the cartridge halfway in there and had to fire the one in the chamber. then you wouldn't be able to rack another one in there. Because if you got that halfway in and turned loose of it and decided to go ahead and shoot. But it also means that it's not going to cause a tremendous malfunction. Let's see here. Hang on a second. I got... all you got to do is just, with the action closed, go ahead and shove that round in and keep going. So here not too long ago, a guy came in, had an immaculate 44 Magnum Marlin, just like the one that I got rid of that I thought I was going to get rid of and never get again. The only thing is, though, mine was, I had been shot. It still shot fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It was an excellent gun. But I have put many thousands of rounds through it. So this guy brought me one that was, he brought it in, wanted to sell it. And I said, well, you've come to the right place. I'll fix you right up here. So it's excellent condition. And it's back prior to the cross-bolt safety. And it's almost, it acts like it's almost brand new. Probably hadn't had, I don't know, you know, a couple hundred rounds put through it or whatever. So I jumped on that. And then we had a couple of the 336. I don't know, DeTinker. Is anybody else having sound problems? Looks like DeTinker. Must be his computer. I'm sorry about that. But then we got I think it's a 336C, I believe is what it's called. Anyway, it's a little short, little bitty trapper model, little compact 30-30. It is the handiest, probably one of the most powerful, handiest little guns out there. Yeah, there's lots of short, you know, scout models and stuff, but they're still not like the 30-30 or the lever action there. All right, we're having sound problems, several of you. So if you can hear me, I want you to hang out for a minute, and I'm going to kill my Winamp. If anybody can understand me, let's see. Let me put this in the chat room. I'm going to kill Winamp. And I'll be right back and find out if the sound problem is on my end or some or you guys. So stay with me, and I'll be back. Okay, I think it's back up now. You guys let me know if it's working right. It seems to be running smoothly. So let's go ahead and keep going here and see if we can make this work. That didn't take too awful long. That was kind of painless. Edge of the Woods, I appreciate you dropping in here. I'm glad you got your certificate deal straightened up. Any of you guys that have been, we need to get a hold of Casper Mountain and M. Jantz. Have them get their certificates that they have coming there. Okay, well, that's I didn't want to take up the whole show here with stuff about the lever action, but that's why we have the class. Is what if you get out there and happen to run into more trouble than you thought you were going to, and have to use that lever action as a fighting gun. So that's what we're doing. And it looks like the 64 is not doing well. I'm going to kill the 64 completely. And see if we can just go on the 32 here. I don't know why this is doing this. Well, actually, it's running okay right now. So if you have any more trouble with it, I'm going to kill the 64. Right now, it seems to be doing all right. So as well, what about calibers for the lever action? Well, as Chuck said there a while ago, 30-30 is hard to beat. The problem with the 30-30, especially now, is availability of ammunition. And, well, that's really the biggest thing. It's got a little more recoil. It's got a, you know, a little bigger in size, which that shouldn't be a big deal because it's not any bigger than a 308 or anything else. So, but if you look at it from a very logical standpoint, there's really only one good option. And then there's one that runs a real close second. But I have the real close second. But if I had it to do over again, I would have the 357 Magnum in the carbine, because the ammunition is going to be easier to find. It's lighter, smaller, you can carry more of it. I'd rather have a 357 Magnum handgun than a 44 Magnum handgun to be a companion to my lever action. So as much as I desperately love the 44 Magnum in the rifle and handgun, but it's just I don't like it as a fighting handgun. If I had to go and out and save the world with a pair of matched weapons there, I would rather have the 357 Magnum. Now, we've got the 44, obviously, a lot more punch to it. But when you look at the amount of energy coming out of a 357 Magnum rifle, it's pretty substantial over the handgun. And the handgun's pussycat either. It's got a pretty good bit by itself. The 44 has got more, of course it does. So does the 460 have more than the 44. But, you know, there's a stopping point there somewhere where it becomes more than necessary. And I think for medium range, you know, under 200 yards, 200 and less, I should say, I think your 357 will do just about 100% of what you want to do. With full metal jacketed bullets or with armor-piercing bullets, hard cast, several different ways you can go with that. That 357 will punch through just about, it'll zip through most of your vest. You'll have to get the same level of vest to stop that as you would a rifle round, I would imagine. So. There's no Hopper still thinks that 44 is the way to go, and where Hopper is, it's really not a bad choice, because up there you got more likelihood of big bears, you've got larger game animals, and it makes a little more sense in that part of the country to carry a Ruger Red Hawk and a Marlin 1894. In this part of the country, I wouldn't be. I don't want the weight and the bulk of the handgun. If I didn't want to match, if I didn't want to have a companion to the rifle, then 44 would be fine. But there's going to be a problem with finding ammunition for it. At least you have more than one choice. The 357 is immensely more popular than the 44. And if you find 38s, you can still use them. Of course, you can find 44 specials that'll work in the 44 too, but there just ain't very many of them around. 44 special is way not popular anymore. It was at one time. But the 007, I think that there would be eventually some problems with the 10mm lever action. It's very romantic. It sounds good. But with that being a rimless cartridge, at some point you're going to run into some problems. I would like to have something in line of a little semi-automatic carbine that uses Glock magazines and 10mm. That would be awesome. There's a couple of them out there that haven't been out for very long. But as far as lever actions go, you're probably going to want to stick with your rimmed cartridges. There's not too many of them that will shoot a rimless cartridge. The BLR, the Browning, will shoot rimless cartridges. I don't like the Browning at all. It's a sleek-looking gun, pretty. But boy, what a bear that thing is to take apart and get back. Not too hard to take apart. Getting it back together is the trick. And if you pay attention, you know what you're doing. It's not too bad. But the Winchester and the Marlin and the Puma and the, of course, those are all knockoffs of the Winchester, but they come apart real easy. Doc seems like he's having trouble. Anybody else having trouble with sound? Damn it, we thought we fixed that. But Doc, if you're on the 64, try the 32. I think that's where most everybody's at tonight. Hopefully that... And Doc says the 30-30 and the 44 is most practical choices. I still disagree. I think in practicality, I think that the 357 is much more practical, even though the Doc, how come you can't get the 32? It's on the same website as everybody else. I guess I don't know how that works, but you just go down and push the button right below the 64. But I guess I'll have to come down to Mississippi and help him get that squared away. And maybe I'd like to. But at any rate, if you're going to use something that would be justify optics, the Marlin is probably the better way to go if you want to put optics on it. I think I like the aperture type sights best if I want something that's rugged and fast, and if I wanted to I don't think I'd want to tie up the gun and take away from some of its convenience by throwing a scope on it. But Doc, you know, if Edge of the Woods comes back tonight, we'll ask him if he can help you. He is a Linux pro there, Linux, I guess it is. He might be able to help you, and hopefully he can get you in there. But I think the 32 is still running smoothly. Let me go over here and look and see what the 64 looks like. It is bouncing in and out. So, dadgummit, Doc, I don't know how to help you, because I know nothing whatsoever about Linux. But Edge of the Woods sure does, so he might be able to help you. All right, let's go. Doc got in here just in time. Matter of fact, we need to take a little break here. And we'll come back. Doc's going to love this discussion, I think. Or maybe not, I don't know.
I'll be back.
Tune in to the Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern on Just Measures Radio. Don't miss it. Join Cope for 2 full hours of political incorrectness, current events, gun talk, and so much more.
Welcome to Doc's Freedom Files.
The left loves to corrupt the language, and nowhere is this clearer than in the phenomena of so-called police gun buybacks. It should be clear to anyone with even a passing familiarity with the English language that one cannot buy back that which one never owned. Worse than tortured linguistics, there is not the slightest evidence that these so-called buybacks accomplish anything good, and there is every indication that they do harm. The buyback coordinators invariably promise anonymity to those turning guns in, for which they are paid in cash or gift certificates. This makes them the ideal venue for criminals to dispose of criminal evidence and to sell inexpensive stolen firearms. Most crooks are smart enough not to convert a $2,000 weapon into a $50 gift card. Usually, the expensive stuff goes right into the black market, and the cops wind up with a bunch of cheap, or stolen, or broken shotguns and .22s. If a gun was stolen, the correct police response should be to assist in returning it to the rightful owner and arresting the thief, not anonymously buying it and destroying it. Running the numbers on every gun and investigating questionable ones is expensive. It takes scarce manpower, and anyway, the point of these farces is to score political brownie points and demonize firearms, not to deter crime. Some expensive, legitimate weapons do make it to the buybacks. An elderly widow may, having no idea of its value, turn in her departed husband's treasured rare war memento or expensive collectible. Should the city or police department give the lady $50, or would it be kinder and more ethical to direct her to a reputable gun dealer? Contrary to Hollywood stereotypes, a fair number of police officers don't know much about guns, are not avid shooters, and only concern themselves with their service weapons. On the other hand, virtually all departments also have their hardcore gun guys, or gals, who may be armorers, instructors, collectors, competitors, or just avid hobbyists. Gun buybacks may turn up a bewildering variety of firearms, and many of them can be expected to be in poor repair or even loaded. An intelligent watch commander is not going to send officers with poor firearms familiarity to a buyback. No, he's going to send his gun guys. The gun guys realize how stupid these events are, and since they genuinely appreciate guns, they cringe at the thought of fine firearms going to the torch. Let's say a nice presentation case comes across the table. The officer opens it and discovers a Smith & Wesson Model 29 50th Anniversary Commemorative 44 Magnum. This is a handgun worth somewhere north of $5,000. Stranger things have happened. Now answer honestly. By the end of the shift, do you think this revolver is going to wind up in the torch bin or in the trunk of some cop's private vehicle? If you answered torch bin, I hope the leprechauns are generous to you and the unicorns leave you lots of Skittles. So-called police gun buybacks are not buybacks at all, but are exercises in crass political posturing. In some areas, gun buybacks have been met by Second Amendment activists, setting up their own tables and offering sellers better deals than the police. Not only is that pro-Second Amendment, but it's also pro-free enterprise. Two things authoritarian hacks can't stand. This is Doc Toops wishing you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Join us every Sunday for the Medic Shack.
The Emperor has been expecting you.
With your host, Chuck Hudson.
You know what the chain of command is? It's the chain I go get and beat you with till you understand who's in rank command.
Cat Ellis.
You're having far too much fun at my expense.
And our producer, Jacob Hudson.
Who is this genius?
Sundays, 7 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the Just Measure Radio Network.
Hi, this is Amy Reynolds inviting you to come see what it's like living way out here, new on Just Measures Radio. We'll talk about cooking, canning, gardening, and homemaking, along with storytelling and nostalgic journeys to yesteryear.
Join Amy every Monday through Thursday morning right here on Just Measures Radio Network for Living Way Out Here, 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 to 11 Central. Don't miss it.
And what I wouldn't give to ride around in that old truck with him. If heaven wasn't so far away, I'd pack up the kids and go for the day. Introduce them to their grandpa.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Colt Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench, here on Just Measures Radio.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling in them hills, and it's waiting for me there.
All right. We're going to try to talk about this objectively a little bit, if that's possible. But the military is looking to replace the 9mm. And I think that they're a little reluctant to go back to the 45. And I don't know, I haven't studied up on the deal for looking to get rid of the 9mm or just the Beretta 92. But it looks like they're trying to upgrade calibers a little bit. It's funny that they, you know, Ray mentioned that here a while ago, and I was going to talk about one. I found a story where a guy said why, the title of the story is Why the U.S. Military, hang on a minute, Why the U.S. Military Made the Right Decision by Ditching the 1911. I think they could have taken all those 1911s they had and melted them down and started with new ones and probably done okay. One of the reasons they got rid of the 1911s because they've been using the damn thing since some of those have been around since the 40s, I guess, and they're slap wore out. They've been rebuilt time and time and time again. So instead of just starting over, now I don't know why it would have been they said it was cost prohibitive. Why would it be cost prohibitive to start over with something that you already have ammunition and magazines and parts in stock for? I never ever understand that. I think it's let's see. Oh, I thought Edge of the Woods was in there, so. But be that as it may, the 1911, we have to look also at the quality of people, maybe the quality is not a good word, of the people. We have a lot more women in the military. We also have a lot of guys that are not, we don't have nearly as many John Wayne's and Audie Murphy's, is of course Audie Murphy wasn't a very big guy either. But the point I'm trying to make here is the 1911 is, by anybody's standards, a heavy gun and a heavy handgun compared to some of the modern guns. The first thing people want to say, well, suck it up, Buttercup. If you can't handle it, we'll get out. Well, you know, that's nice to say, and it's real manly and everything. But the point is that there are just a lot of people in the military that are not what they used to be. And it is a heavy gun, and it has a large grip. And between the women and some of the other less than manly types that we have in there nowadays, some of them, 1911 is a little bit of a handful. And I don't know that I'm not leading up here to say that they should have gone with the Glock, because I don't know that the Glock is the best choice for military either, because they have so little training in handguns. But I don't know that it would be any worse than the 1911 as far as safety goes. So this is not a 1911 versus Glock discussion, but they're looking at getting rid of that. This guy says that, 007, I know exactly what you mean. I agree. But hang on a minute. Why is this not coming up here? I have more damn trouble with this computer. Could be I just got too much stuff on it. Maybe I just need to nuke it and start from square one here. Come on, let's do something here. I wanted to use some of the quotes and stuff that this guy is using here if I could make the cotton picking thing work. There's just so happened, since we're going through this, I have another story tonight that is very closely related, and that is seven reasons why cops choose the 9mm over 40. Well, I don't know how many cops are choosing the 9mm over 40, but I know some of them are. Up there in 007's neck of the woods, they had two or three departments up there that got rid of the 357 SIG, which, you know, surprise, surprise, and went with the 9mm. I figured they'd go with the 40. As a matter of fact, I was astonished that they went with the 9mm. But there's more and more departments starting to do that, and a lot of it is because of the same reason this guy's talking about in the military. There's people with smaller frames, smaller hands, and don't handle the recoil as well, or the weight of some of the steel frame guns, and the polymer frame guns work better for that class of people. Now, what in the world is... We are experiencing technical difficulties here. Let's see. What can I do? Let's try to move this. Okay. I did it. Damn, I'm good. Okay. Why the U.S. military made the right decision ditching the 1911? With the as wore out as I'm sure that there was a little bit of, in many cases, there was an accuracy issue. The you know, by the time I went in the military, I was fairly decent with a handgun, and I was just looking. I was just amazed. I said, really? That's all it takes to be an expert. It's a good thing, because this gun won't do much better than that. So I think that that's probably part of it. The weight, I know, is part. Size of the grip, I know, is part of it. Whether any of that's relevant or not is a different story. I don't know whether any of that holds water or not, but it does. It is part of what they're using as their discussion here, or for their discussion. It's still not coming up. So, I'll find it here again, I promise. There it is. It said that I was a little put out that they chose the Beretta instead of, you know, the Ruger. Ergonomically, at least back during that time, 1985 is when this took place, I think. At that time, Rugers sucked. Their magazine release and stuff was extremely not ergonomically designed. It was very, very hard on thumbs and just wasn't a good idea. But, you know, several other choices out there that were American-made guns, so I think what Beretta goes and moves a factory over to the States so they can become an American-made gun, but that doesn't make them an American company, I don't guess. But the according to this story here, it says when the United States military chose the Beretta 92 to replace the all-American 1911, as a standard sidearm, people lost their minds. It was as if society forgot about the M16's failure in Vietnam, and all the men who died as a result did so for nothing. Once again, the military bought into some gun company's marketing hype and ditched a successful design for a smaller caliber and weapon with no perceivable gains. I don't know if I'd go so far. I mean, the 45, you look at the energy that the 45 has, certainly there's... an advantage to that, no question. But if you look at the, I would be a bigger fan of carrying, you know, 15, 17 rounds, whatever it is, in the Beretta as opposed to 7 rounds of 45s. Now, they could have address that by using double stack 1911s, but then you're into, yes, you're getting more capacity, but yes, you're also getting a much, much larger grip. As big as my hands are, I don't even like picking double stack 45s at all. They're just way too big. Can I handle? Of course I can. I wear a size 14 ring, and I don't have any problem. It's just bigger than I like to have it. Same reason that we reduce the grips on Glocks is, you know, by my way of thinking, yes, I can control the recoil. Yes, I can pick it up all right and everything. But what if you're injured? What if somebody gets a hold of that gun? You know, you got blood all over it or something. You're trying to retain it. Then there is a little bit of an issue. It'd be like, can you hang on to a 2x4 better or a broomstick? I don't reduce the grips on Glocks because I have tiny hands. I reduce the grips on Glocks because I want better retention. And to make that 1911 a double stack, it takes away some of that retention issue. It has nothing to do with whether or not I like 1911s. That's not it at all. As a matter of fact, I didn't like any of the doubles. The last double stack that I liked, let me say the first double stack that I liked was the Smith & Wesson Model 59. It was a little bigger. It was 9mm, so it certainly wasn't as big as the 45, but it was still a little bit bigger than I really wanted. But it shot well, it was accurate, it was dependable, and it was a great gun. I didn't keep it for very long. I'm always, back in those days, I was always trading. I'd buy a gun, and sometimes I'd make it all the way to the house before I'd find somebody to trade it off to. And some of them I kept for years after that. This guy, yeah, the Para Ordnance, the Kimber, now the Browning High Power, but it was a 9mm. But the Browning High Power and everything like it, excellent feel. I always liked those guns. I did not like the hammer bite. You had to replace the hammer on them, or I did anyway. But other than that, that Browning High Power is an awesome little pistol. I really like them. Because we went through this the other night, and you know, we finally got rid of them. But look at the most of the people in the military, the vast and overwhelming majority of them, are not what you would call a pistolero. They have been led to believe that the handgun is strictly a last ditch thing, and it's only used at very close range. But if you were able to use that, let's say you have a limited amount of rifle ammo, and a situation came up where you could probably use your handgun if you could shoot it well enough, would it not be logistically, wouldn't that not be a good idea if you could do it and save your rifle ammo? Then that may be a far stretch there. Doc, I did actually bob the hammer on my 40 caliber high power, and it helped. It wasn't as good as it could have been, but it helped quite a bit. But putting those little rounded hammer, I forgot what you call it, a commander hammer, something like that, or it looks like one anyway. That's the one that worked the best for me. But 007, if you ever get out to the range somewhere and you get an opportunity to shoot a high power, you're going to like it. You may not like it as much as your Glock, but you're going to like it. It's a great gun. But what I was getting at there, what about capacity? I was saying most of these guys and gals are not pistoleros. They have 7 rounds. How many magazines do they carry? How fast can they change them? If this truly is a last-ditch weapon, and you are in up to your neck in poop, if you haven't practiced a lot in those reloads, then you might as well just carry the one magazine that's in the gun. Because if you're in deep poop, you're gonna have a hard time getting all that taken care of, because nobody in the military, I mean outside of Delta and some of the special ops guys and stuff, unless they are recreational shooters to start with, they don't practice with their handgun, and they don't. There's no training. You go and qualify twice a year. So what? You don't qualify a change in magazines. All you do is stand out there and shoot at a target about the size of the hall closet, at different ranges, and that's it. There is no, for me, there wasn't. There was no training for taking care of some of these other procedures on the 1911 or any other handgun. You did it in with the rifle because they considered that your primary gun, and they wanted you to do that, and you shot enough to become fairly proficient doing that. But with a handgun, you qualify twice a year, you go out there and shoot, you know, whatever it was, 25, 30, 40 rounds, and you're done until another 6 months. And everybody doesn't get to do that. Your average rank and file soldier doesn't ever shoot the handgun. They've got to have a certain need, a certain military occupational specialty, certain MOS for to even use a handgun at all. The only reason I did is because I was in recovery, and I was in also in I was the TC quite often on M88s on the track vehicle recovery vehicles, and we were authorized to carry handguns from time to time. But I mean, it wasn't a big deal for me, but because, you know, I've been shooting them a long time, many years before I went there. I didn't go in the Army till I was 26 years old. So I'd already been there and done that quite a bit as far as guns go. So, but would it not be? I mean, don't answer this from an emotional standpoint. You know, the old standby, old war horse, rah rah rah, 1911. I understand all that, and it served well for a lot of years. But if you had the opportunity to pick up either a 7, well, let's say you only had one magazine. Okay, we go in here, we escaped somewhere, and we go into this old garage, and there's you and your buddy, and there's a 1911 with one loaded magazine, and there's a Beretta 92 with one loaded magazine. Which one do you want? Well, I guess you could knock your buddy in the head and take both of them. Maybe that'd be the way to go. But I would take the 9mm. I would rather have the 40, but I'm not interested in a high capacity 45 at all. But the only, you know, there another option to that is it's not a very great option, but if you were overseas and you had had somebody could send you a 10-round magazine. They have single-stack 10-rounders for 1911s. That might be a partial answer to it. But I'm a fan of high capacity. I'm a fan of lots of ammo. It's one of those things that goes along with the insurance analogy that I use all the time. Why would you not want plenty of ammo? I don't get it. 007, what's Jason's status on the shop at the ranch? What do you mean, what is his status on the shop? You mean, how is he coming along putting it together? Or what? If that's what you mean, it's coming along, but it's kind of slow. They've been working on they're trying to put target lines on the 1, 2, and 300-yard rifle ranges right now. Put them up, they like the one that I did on the 25-yard range. So they're trying to put some others just like them up on the longer range. And that's what they've been working on here in the recent past here. And the other thing is, Jason is very busy working on dry practice kits for our Glocks. For anybody's Glock, as far as that goes. And we just got a big order from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, on these dry practice kits. We got to get 40 of them out to them. And I'll tell you, the supplier that we have used has ticked me off to no freaking end. And I'm not going to say who it is yet until we get a couple of problems resolved. But be assured that I am going to let you know who it is and tell you what all happened here when the time is right. I am very disappointed. They've caused us to be very late with this order to Fort Bragg, and I'm extremely upset about it. I'll tell you what happened. I can tell you what happened without telling you who it is. You can't really narrow it down any kind of way because there's lots of Glock suppliers out there. So we used this one. We haven't used in a long time. And I ordered 40 trigger bars and all the stuff to go along with it to get these dry practice kits made. Well, first thing he said, yeah, I'll try to get it out today. If not, it'll go out first thing tomorrow. This was on Monday or Tuesday. By Friday, they still hadn't gone out. And I said, what in the hell is keeping those from going out? You've got your money. You've got to think, get them sent already. So they got them sent that day. Now we're already almost a week late. And when we got them, there was 40 magazine releases in there, magazine catch. Not 40 trigger bars. So we were stuck. I mean, there's still some things we can do on the other parts that we got, but we didn't need that. So I called them today, and I said, hey, buddy, we've got a problem here. You need to help me work this out. I said, the other day when we talked, magazine catches never even came up in the conversation. And you sent me 40 of them. I want trigger bars. You also did not send me the additional trigger housing that I asked for that was above and beyond and outside the regular order. And so he said, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I got all this stuff done. I said, all right. And I said, just get them out today. I have to have that out today. I said, what's the total on that going to be? And he told me. And I said, well, wait. I said, I'm sending all this stuff back to you. And this is all your fault to start with. You didn't get it shipped. And then you sent me the wrong stuff. I said, what you need to do is subtract the difference between the magazine catches that I'm sending back and whatever that is, and charge my card for. Okay, I'll do that. And I looked at the bank thing as I was driving in there just before the show, and he didn't do that. He charged me full price for all the trigger bars. So now when they get all the magazine catches, we'll need to get that money refunded. Put it back on our card. So that has been a large part of what has been going on with my life here for the last few days, is trying to get these damn Glock things straightened out here. And needless to say, there is, unless I talk to a manager and he says, hey, you know, there was uncalled for, there was no reason for that whatsoever, I'm going to credit you something, or I'm going to, you know, whatever, and try to make it up for him. Even just a heartfelt apology would go a long ways. But if that doesn't happen, even if it does happen, maybe, but if it doesn't happen, you can bet your bottom dollar that we won't be doing business with these people again, and everybody on the internet is going to know why. Because I don't mind sharing when people screw up and don't take responsibility for it, I don't mind letting everybody know, as most of you have already probably figured out. All right, let me move this stuff around here a little bit. And and we'll be back.
That's what I said. James is darn good. But he's better. And I'm better than both of them. No brag, just fact.
Now you listen to me.
Who the hell are you?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
Do what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Bom, 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 I ran. Bom, 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 I ran. Some rocks. Tell the Ayatollah gonna put you in a box.
Every Sunday for the Medic Shack.
The Emperor has been expecting you.
With your host, Chuck Hudson.
You know what the chain of command is? It's the chain I go get and beat you with till you understand who's in command.
Cat Ellis.
You're having far too much fun at my expense.
And our producer, Jacob Hudson.
Who is this genius?
Sundays, 7 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the Just Measure Radio Network.
Gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron.
He lay face down on the desert sand, clutching a six-gun in his hand.
Shot from behind, I thought he was dead, for under his heart was an ounce of lead. But a spark still burned, so I used my knife, and late that night, I saved the life of Ringo.
Ringo, Ringo.
I nursed him till the danger passed. The days went by, he mended fast. And then from dawn till setting sun, he practiced with that deadly gun. And hour on hour, I watched in awe. No human being could match the draw of Ringo. One day we rode the mountain crest, and I went east, and he went west. I took to law and wore a star, while he spread terror near and far. With lead and blood he gained such fame, all through the west they feared the name of Ringo. I knew someday I'd face the test, which one of us would be the best. And sure enough, the word came down that he was holed up in the town. I left the posse out in the street, and I went in alone to meet Ringo. They said my speed was next to none, but my lightning draw had just begun when I heard a blast that stung my wrist. The gun went flying from my fist, and I was looking down the bore of the deadly 44 of Ringo. They say that was the only time that anyone had seen him smile. He slowly lowered his gun, and then he said to me, "We're even, friend." And so at last I understood that there was still a spark of good in Ringo. I blocked the path of his retreat. He turned and stepped into the street. A dozen guns spit fire and lead. A moment later, he lay dead. The town began to shout and cheer. Nowhere was there shed a tear for Ringo.
Ringo.
The story spread throughout the land that I had beaten Ringo's hand. And it was just the years, they say, that made me put my guns away. But on his grave, they can't explain the tarnished star above the name of Ringo.
No, the sound didn't go away. I did. I had to go take care of something unexpected there for a minute, and I put on a song, and evidently it wasn't long enough, so I apologize for that. But I'm back in all my splendor right now. So let's just real quick on this 9mm deal before we get off of this. I think that they probably used the same logic. Well, no problems about it. They used the same logic on doing the Beretta 92 as they did the M16. You know, we had the M1 Grand only had 8 rounds, and then we had the bolt action rifles before that. And then we went with the M1A or the M14. But I think that there was. And I'm just guessing at this, but I think that some of the rank and file soldiers there were probably a little on the lacking a little bit of the horsiness that they needed to carry that M14 all day long every day, and I think they were looking for something with, you know, higher capacity and less weight and come up with the M16. And I think that's kind of similar to the same thing they did with the Beretta. The M16 was a kind of a force multiplier when you have 20-30 rounds of ammo, and of course you could do the same thing with the M14, but it was much heavier. The ammo was heavier, the magazines were heavier and bulkier, and so it got to be, they went, kept going down until they come up with these little bitty bullets and lots of them. And you know, I guess it works, it does its thing when it's required to. So alright, that's I guess we've come a long ways. A lot of stuff has happened in the military over the years, from the well, if you want to go all the way back, go to the muzzle loaders and stuff, and then the best thing you could possibly get then was the 4570 in the 1873 Springfield. How awesome was that? And well, not too, when they then came out with the what did they use after that? It wasn't the 30-30 yet, but it was probably 44-40s or something in lever action. And if they would have, somebody would have thought about making a lever action 45-70 at that time, it probably would have gone over really well. But it was quite a few years after that. Doc, I agree. I'm with you 100%, but I think there's still a lot of people out there that become, but those two guns and the ammunition that's required to feed them is just a hell of a lot of weight. And some of the people, especially nowadays, particularly with the females that we have and the girly boys that there is, then that's no, they wouldn't be underarmed, except that they, after a day's hike, they probably wouldn't be able to use them anymore. It'd be too wore out. But let's see. Yeah, 007, that's exactly the reason we do that. We reduce that grip, make it a little smaller. So we have the best of both worlds there. We have a smaller grip that's easier to hold on to, plus we still have that 15, 17 round capacity or whatever it may be. So I think it's I think it works pretty well. Amy's gun has what we used to call tree bark stippling. Haven't done any of that for quite a while. We used to do a lot of them, and I don't know, it's kind of if you're gonna have it against your skin for concealment, that's probably not the best thing. You know, really, the that boa stippling seems to work pretty well. It's not aggressive, but you have a good bite on it, good traction, and it doesn't bother me against the skin. Of course, I don't wear one against skin very often. I've always got at least a t-shirt in between there, but I have a few times. And it's probably the best stippling out there that is still as secure as it is, but not hard on the skin. So and we could continue to go down with that argument and go with the 22 Magnum, absolutely. I can't. For survival purposes, you know, maybe not military. The military, you just haven't got enough penetrating power, enough energy in the 22 Magnum. So it's like everything else. Somewhere in there is a place where you have to stop looking. We could go with the 22 Magnum or the 5.7 or something like that. And yeah, we can have magazines with 20 or 30 rounds and carry 900 rounds in your front pants pocket. But at some point there, it becomes an exercise in carrying ammunition and not being logistically sound idea, or maybe a tactically sound idea would be better. So somewhere in between there, if you look at the 4570, and then look at the 22 Magnum, you know, somewhere in between those are several rounds that are still adequate, have adequate energy and power to do what they need to do, but are smaller and lighter weight and able to carry more. So yeah, I agree with you on the 22 Magnum. The 22 Magnum, I can talk all day about the 22 Magnum. It's an awesome damn round, but it's not one that I would want to carry into combat. Your range is a little limited. Now, you can hit a man out to 250 yards easy with a 22 Magnum. But by the time a 22 Magnum gets out there past 100 yards, you start running out of juice a little bit. If you're talking about only a 40 grain bullet starting out of the barrel at 1600 feet a second or whatever it is. With some of this newer stuff, you're looking at almost 2,000, maybe a little over 2,000. But you sacrifice the weight and the integrity of the bullet to do that. You get those little 30 grain, 28 grain bullets. They're fragile, so you're going to have a hard time with the penetration that would be required. And as light as they are, when you get way out there, you know, when you start pushing that out to its limit, you'd really rather go with 40 grain bullets. If I had to carry a 22 mag knowingly into combat, I would want to see if I could find all the 50 grain bullets that I could find. At the very least, 40s. If I had to do anything different than that, I'd probably rather try to make some other plans if I possibly could. But anyway, that's Doc, we went that way too. Jason and I went with the 17 HMR for a while. We were pretty struck with it for a little while. The problem we had with it, it was superbly accurate. Oh my word, that damn thing will shoot. But we had a job out there where we were using it on prairie dogs in a populated area. And so we decided we'd both try one of those. I had the, what did I have? One of us had a Ruger. I think I had the Ruger, the 1777 or whatever it was. And Jason had, I don't remember what he had. But anyway, we were really, really stricken by this thing for a little while, and we killed a lot of prairie dogs with it. But we started finding out that it's kind of like, and I've said this before, it's kind of like shooting an elk with 243. Yeah, you can do it, but just because the round is accurate enough to hit an elk at 400 yards doesn't mean you should be doing it with the 243. And the same with prairie dogs. Yes, we could hit them out beyond 200 yards if the wind wasn't blowing. But it got to where we were having too many of them, you know, be wounded and run off. And I don't like that for anything. 007, his might have been a Savage. I think you're right. I believe it was a Savage. And so I shot one day. You guys may have heard this story before, but I shot one day that was, 50 feet behind the truck sitting on the edge of the road. And good shot, right in the middle. The bullet did not expand like it was supposed to. And that prairie dog turned around and looked at that and wandered off in the hole. And I said, then that was my last day right there. That was the last one. I said, you got to be kidding me. If that would have 22 Magnum, it would have vaporized him. Even a full metal jacket 22 Magnum would have been done more damage than that. So I took it to the shop, cleaned it up, put it on the shelf, and said, "Okay, I'm gonna try a 22 Magnum again." And I hadn't tried one for years. When I was doing 22 Magnums, you had three choices. You had a 40 grain Full Metal Jacket, or you had a 40-grain hollow point. And that was it. A little later on, they come out with some soft points. And the 22 WRF, you could shoot WRFs in your 22 Magnum in a pinch. It was kind of like shooting 38s in a 357. And it was a great gun. It killed a lot of stuff with it, including deer. And it just kind of, I guess, lost its romance over the years, and it's kind of got away from it. And after the 17 HMR incident, I went and I found out that they had now got all this new ammunition for the 22 Magnum. The 28s, the 30s, 32s, 35s, and all kinds of little ballistic tips and TNTs. And I was saying, damn! And then they got a 50-grain Federal, and they still got the WRFs out there. I said, well, geez, oh, Pete, with all these options, I ought to be able to find something that'll work for me. And I have never looked back. With all these different options with a 22 Magnum, it is such an absolutely freaking amazing caliber. And when I can get a larger diameter, heavier bullet going almost as fast as the 17, well, do I really need to spell that out for you? It didn't take me but one trip out there. I found out, geez, I'm sorry. I came home and repented for forsaking the 22 Magnum for those few years there. But the Doc, you know, those Super Calibris, I did the same thing. The CCIs. Much better quality cartridge. There's no question about that. I've shot a lot of both of them, but the Calibris are for getting rid of pigeons on the windowsill in town is about all they're good for. They're just not like the old CB caps used to be. I found a box of those CB caps the other day. Had one that stuck back in my stash of stuff here that I've had forever. I just put them in a safe place where I wouldn't forget where they're at. 007, you telling me that the Indians are paying $7 an hour to shoot prairie dogs now? If you go out there, they're paying you that? That seems kind of stupid. They ought to pay by the piece. You bring a head or a tail of something. Hell, I sit out there for $7 an hour. I may only kill two, but I'll be out there for all day long. If I sit out there and drink ice water and pop off around every once in a while so they think I'm busy, I'm not sure what they're accomplishing there. But I'll tell you, where 007's talking about, Nappy is the, I don't remember what it is, Navajo Agricultural Products Industry or something like that. And I can absolutely promise you that you have never, ever seen the like of prairie dogs as there are at Nappy. Thousands of acres of prairie dogs. You get out in some of these places and they are, we have set out there and never moved the truck and killed 120 of them in like 4 hours. We have killed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of prairie dogs at Nappy. And you can of course that was back when 22s and 22 Magnums were readily available. But we didn't do too much center fire stuff out there. We'd take a 223 out there once in a while, but mostly it was 22 Magnums. Took the 17s out there, but the 17 just does not have enough ass to do it at sometimes at the ranges that we needed to do it at. So I abandoned it and got rid of it. All right, let's see what else we got. Well, I'm not going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. Let's look at this. Why is this page doing this? I have a problema here for some reason. Let me try to refresh that thing. I've got a along the same lines that we're talking about here is seven reasons why cops choose the 9mm over the 40. I don't know that I'm entirely in agreement with that. I can see picking it maybe over the 45, but to me, the 40 gives me it gives me the weight, the higher diameter of the 45, not quite, but getting close, and it gives me the speed capacity of the 9mm. Not quite, but it's close. And with those two things, I'm going to turn on Task Manager here and see what in the world is going on with this page. All right, give me a second. Now I'm in the dark here. I can't see nothing. Let me let this thing come up here and see if I can get an idea. Okay, it says everything is running fine. So let's try that again. Why are you not running fine? Okay, well, let's open you in a new tab. Let's see if we can get you to come up here. Alright, here we go. We got it up there finally. Seven reasons why cops choose a 9mm over 40. Well, here's the reasons. Less recoil, cheaper ammo, higher capacity. Less recoil, yeah, technically 9mm is a little less than 40. But what they're showing in this picture here is XDs, what they're doing with. So obviously the recoil on an XD is higher than several other guns because it has a very high axis of recoil. Cheaper ammo? Not so much right now. Higher capacity? Yeah, two rounds. Now, when you go from the 1911 to the Beretta 92, you can strut your stuff a little bit because we've got 9 rounds, whatever it is, higher than the 9mm. But with this one, you're talking about two rounds difference with most of them. So it says here that the 9mm is having something of a renaissance these days, and it is. It has had a little bit of trouble getting along. It hurt its popularity. The 40 hurt the 9mm desperately for quite a few years. But knowledgeable people are looking back here and saying, well, it's not that much difference. I can shoot it more. It's not as punishing. More round, yeah. There's some benefits to it, I guess. Although maligned in the past due to its inability to reliably deliver incapacitating force, recent technological improvements in bullet and propellant design have moved the round back to the forefront for many law enforcement departments. And that's the same thing that has happened with the 380. We always said that the 380 just wasn't quite what we wanted, but if we look at the advances in bullet technology and performance today, the 380 is a hell of a lot better than it used to be. And it's, you know, they, case in point here, we guy shot that dude in the theater in Texas, one shot, and not only did it kill him dead with one shot, most Ricky Tick, the bullet went through the a lady's hand before it got into the guy's chest, and it still killed him with one shot. Now that's just one instance too, but 380 has come a long ways in making some of these more anemic rounds a little more horsey. And Doc, I think that it actually did do that in the case of the 45 Gap. When they redesigned that case a little bit and shortened it, used different propellants, and the 45 Gap now operates at what would be considered 45 ACP plus P pressure. If I went, I've said 100 times, if I ever went back to the 45 and knew that I would have plenty of ammo to do it, I would go with the 45 gap. It's a neat round, and it's tremendously, uncannily accurate. Shoots really well. At least all the ones that we've tried were excellent. But I think the 45 suffered from back in the day from not having a lot of choice powder. They had a lot of fluffy powders and stuff, and it wasn't why they didn't redesign it or change some things about it. Probably because there's too many guns out there that were made for that pressure, and probably a liability thing. I don't know. 007, I can tell that story about B.J. Williams right now. Was it Williams? Was that his last name? It was B.J. something. I thought it was Johnson. But anyway, whatever it was. Prior to this incident that 007's talking about there, prior to the night that he went out there to XTO Energy's office trying to drag his girlfriend out of there by the leg, BJ was shot 7 times with a 45 ACP, once in the head, put out his right eye, but they got him down, got him in jail, and all it did was put out his eye. And not only did it not... It took 7 rounds to put him down. Now, this, like I said, this is just one instance. I can also tell you some instances where people died instantly with 1 round from a 45. So, and it wasn't headshot either. But anyway, he got out of jail and went. I don't know what the situation was, but he started chasing his girlfriend. His girlfriend's trying to find somewhere to go. And she sees the lights on out there at XTO Energy. She said, well, there's somebody out there. I shouldn't have said the lights because it actually happened in the daytime. But he said, there's somebody out there, so I'm going to go there and see if I can get some help. So she went squealing up to the door and run inside, and BJ right behind her. And he comes in, grabs her by the ankle, and trying to drag her out. She's holding on to the leg of a desk. A receptionist trying to call 911, and everybody else holding, jumping up and down and holding their hands to their mouth and say, my, what do we do? And finally, one of the executives there grabbed a chair and beat on old what's-his-name on BJ enough that, hold him over until the cops got there. And there's a couple other stories that go along with that. We won't get into them tonight, but... Damn, I'm going to wind up getting blood on everything here. The BJ was 250 and 5'10", really? I thought he was a taller man. I thought he was as tall as me from the stories that I'd gotten. Now, I've never actually met him. I just know lots of stuff that went on with him there. Let me see if that other picture ever came in here. I was going to... show you that here. Stand by just a minute. Oh, speaking of, well, we got all this stuff coinciding here with each other. How awesome is that? Los Angeles. Why do I have these things not working like this? All right, let's do the same thing with it we did with the rest of them. Los Angeles is moving to ban standard capacity magazines, even the ones that are grandfathered in. Said they're looking to become the third California city to institute its own gun control laws. The California already has a magazine capacity limit in place, but the law addresses the sale and transfer of those magazines, not necessarily possession. So the new law would make it a misdemeanor to possess these magazines at all, regardless of date of manufacture or how they were acquired. According to the LA Daily News, the Los Angeles City's Attorney's Office revised and proposed ordinance to mirror large capacity magazine bans in San Francisco and Sunnyvale that have withstood Second Amendment challenges in two Northern California districts. The Sunnyvale case is being appealed. The revised Los Angeles proposal would make possessing large capacity magazines a misdemeanor 1 year after the ordinance's adoption and give owners of the clips 60 days to surrender them. What? No. With several exceptions for law enforcement, because they're so much better than us, museum collections, and for magazines that hold 10 or less rounds of ammunition for firearms purchased before January 1st, 2000. Since the sale and transfer of these magazines is illegal in California, it would seem that there would be no legal way for residents of L.A. to even get rid of their magazines. There's not a provision in there to give the magazines to the cops. Maybe there's a legal way to transfer them out of state. Yeah. Well, anyway, lots of stuff going on. Let's look. I'm probably going to have to do the same thing with this story. Let me go check my chat. Oh, that came up. How about that? Let me go look at the chat room here and see what's going on. Well, it's not working. Let's try this. Try another thing here. Something is wrong with this whole window. I don't know what it is. Well, this one's working anyway. The Supreme Court here, this just happened a couple of weeks ago, has, let's see, did we talk about this yet? No. Supreme Court has just made staying on the right side of the law a little more difficult. This was, this is unbelievable. This was a hard one to swallow right here. The court ruled in favor of gun control groups and the Obama administration, even as much as they have ruled against him in the recent past here. This settles the a lower court ruling, I guess, that has been a problem for them for a few years. They were trying to, let's see, the ones that were in the majority here in which the court attempted to broaden the definition of a straw purchase. The case was based on a purchase by a former police officer, Bruce Abramski, purchased a Glock handgun from a law enforcement discount in his home state of Virginia. While filling out the 4473, Bruce answered the question, 11A, that's the first question on the thing there, are you the actual transferee and buyer of the firearm listed on the form? That's on all of them. Let's see. Are you... Okay, warning. You are not the actual buyer if you are acquiring the firearm on behalf of another person. If you are not the actual buyer, the dealer cannot transfer the firearm to you. The actual definition of a purchaser have the courts divided. For instance, the court allows a person to buy a firearm with the intention of giving it as a gift or to buy it for the purposes of a raffle without being considered a straw purchase. Abramski's case was different, however, in that the uncle, Bruce Abramski, later transferred the firearm to... had sent him a check with the Glock 19 written in the memo a few days before the actual firearm purchase. Okay. It's not a good thing. Therefore, the issue at hand was whether the statement was material to a sale that would otherwise be lawful. Neither the buyer nor the uncle had any legal restrictions that would have prevented them from owning the Glock. The Obama administration stated that Abramski did not act within the letter and spirit of the law, claiming the action was necessary to ensure accurate record keeping to later trace the weapon. However, the 4473 is not supposed to be a weapons registration. As a matter of fact, they're not supposed to keep their information more than 24 hours on that. I don't know who keeps track of that and everything or how accurate it is, but that's the law. It is merely a record of over-the-counter firearm transaction with a secondary purpose of obtaining the necessary information for a background check. The Gun rights activists charge the administration position as a massive overreach. Their contention states this improperly defines a law, the straw purchase law, that is meant to prevent legal purchases. Our legal or legal purchases that would then be handed over to individuals that could not legally purchase or possess the weapon. This goes on a little ways. They're just trying to reword this stuff and make it. Let me get this one paragraph. There's a lot in here. During the original case and subsequent appeals, Abramski admitted he was the buyer and claimed he made it clear that he intended to sell the pistol to his uncle in Pennsylvania. He further claimed that he was instructed the transfer would be legal as long as his uncle received the firearm through an FFL and filled out the appropriate 4473. That is a fact, which is an action that can only be completed days later. However, this fact seemed to have landed on deaf ears for the majority of the High Court's members. The justices were not concerned with the entire process, but only focused on the narrow matter of intent when Box 11A was checked. So there you go. It pays for us to be very, very cautious in how we do this. 007, he said, he'd be wondering 11A on the 4473 in regards of a wife buying her hubby a G20 for Christmas. Yes, she can do that. There's a couple of ways you can do it. In the first place, it is perfectly legal for her to buy that and give it to you as a gift. Perfectly legal. However, it's still going to be in her name. If somebody steals it from you and goes out and kills somebody, they're going to come to her first. So even if it's the wife, you still need to have a bill of sale. Another thing would be, she could give you a gift certificate, you know, whatever, and say, here, go buy you a Glock 20. This is what I want you to have. This is what I'm giving you for Christmas. And you could go do that and fill it out yourself. Another thing would be, what if, let's say it wasn't you. You and your wife get along well. Let's say it was somebody else. And 5 years down the road, she runs into a handsome milkman and says, you know what? That 007 jerk, I think I'm going to go ahead. Oh, no, we're not talking about him anymore. This hubby I got here ain't cutting it anymore. I've got this other guy is more better. So I'm leaving, and that gun is mine because it's in my name, and you can't prove otherwise. So if there ever was a divorce, if anything ever happened there, if God forbid, if something happened to her, you may not be able to prove ownership of that gun if you don't have a bill of sale and everything to go along with it. So there's several things that ways to consider that there. Let's see, bill of sale, you got that done. So that alleviates most of your problems right there, as long as you got that bill of sale and it's dated and signed. Rights at risk. I didn't know you were still with us, honey. I'm glad you're still up. We've been talking about stuff I figured probably didn't interest you too much. But anyway, I'm glad you're still there. I'm fixing to run out of gas here pretty quick. You were there when I showed the pictures of my thumb to start with, didn't you? I'll have to tell you, it's throbbing a little bit. I wish I hadn't done that, actually. If anybody wants to know the truth, I wish I hadn't done that at all. But there's another story here, real quick, about if you were going to replace the Beretta M9, what would you choose to do it with? Well, there's several stories here. They could go back to the 1911, and they might. There's still, I'm sure there's still a lot of magazines and a lot of parts, you know, in warehouses somewhere. And from a safety standpoint, I don't know, maybe the 1911 is not a bad idea. The SIG P226, no. Not just no, but hell no. First place, they're way too damn expensive. Second place, there has been as many negligent discharges with injuries out there at this particular training facility that will forevermore go unnamed with double action SIGs than I think any other single manufacturer out there. The Glock 21. Well, from my standpoint, yeah, Glock 21. We're back into that big grip thing. If they're gonna do it, of course they need to stick with a NATO round. So it's gonna have to be. They either need to standardize the 40, or stick with a 9mm or 45. So the Glock 21 has a big grip. We talked about that earlier. If they're gonna go to a Glock, I'd rather see them go to the 17, and stay with the 9mm. The next one on the list. The Glock 9 or a 40, one of the most successful handgun designs ever. There are so many Glock models that it's hard to keep them all straight. No, it's not. I know them all. The two most popular calibers, of course, 9 and 40. You'll most often see them in full-size guns or compact models. Glocks have seen widespread use with our military with various units, regular and elite, even though they haven't been officially adopted. The uber-elite Delta Force operators reportedly carry Glock 22s in 40 Smith & Wesson. I don't know that whether that's true or not. I can't verify that. But last choice here is the Smith & Wesson M&P. Again, a little more expensive. The M&P is a good gun. I'm not a fan. I don't want one. But the grip is small. It's very ergonomically designed as far as grip angle and everything. Nice, built nicely, feels good. I don't like the triggers on them, but you know, it's not a bad choice. So there you go. That's gonna, let's see, 1858 Remington. Yeah, there you go. That'd probably do the trick. But, you know, that's the thing, 007, is that if you shoot a 1911, then you're crawling around under a car or truck working on stuff and you wind up scratching it. You know, there are some things about polymer frame guns that just can't be denied, whether you like the Glock or not. I mean, to be able to, God, I have rolled around in the dirt and the Gen 4 is decent, not too late. It is quite a bit better, you're right. Quite a bit smaller than the original 21 if you don't put any of the grip panels on it. And the SF was a little better. The Glock 21 SF was not bad. Now, I tell you what, when we reduced the SF, we could make it down where it felt almost like a reduced 9mm. It's a great choice if you're looking for a 10mm or a 45 in a Glock. And by the way, I'm glad you popped in there. I didn't know you were with us. I haven't looked at the deal here lately, so glad you hung in there with us. All right, well, I'm getting tired. I'm starting to babble. My thumb has killed me. I got to check one more time and see if that one picture came in yet. Forgot how to do this. Where in the hell is that? There it is. I'm going to check this and see if it's in there. This thumb is killing me. It's aching, and it's going to ache. It's going to not going to be a pleasant night tonight, I can tell already. Let's give this just a second here and see if we get a notification that it came in. That way I won't have to download it off the phone and everything. If you guys are interested, while we're waiting on this, if you guys are interested in shooting with a writer from SWAT Magazine, you might be interested in the fighting lever action class that we're having on 16, 17 August. I'm not sure that that's the one he's going to take yet. He's looking at doing one or the other of them. I'm not sure which. We're not doing a lot of those this year, but it may become more popular. All right, that picture hadn't come in. I'll have to do it some other time. I'm going to try to get on out of here now. We'll see you guys tomorrow night with Liberty Lounge. There is no reason in the world that we shouldn't be able to do that. Amy will not be in until Monday, of course. And we'll see you tomorrow night. Have your request ready.
Have gun, we'll try to reach the card of a man. A night without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire heeds the calling wind. A soldier of...
Okay, that about wraps it up for another PM edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me every Thursday night for 2 hours of 99 and 44 100% pure gun talk. Good night.
Just knight of silver as his badge of trust. There are campfire legends that the flames may spin.